In The Narrow Corner, the novel by W. Somerset Maugham, dramatized for radio by Geoffrey Siegel.
Let me say at once that I had been extremely reluctant to leave my practice in Foochow, even for the relatively short period of 3 months. Not, I assure you, out of any undue devotion or sense of duty toward my patients. I would regard my Hippocratic oath, if I ever took it, as having very little effect on the sum total of human suffering. And I'm fully aware that such clinical skills as I might possess are quite incidental to the part played by nature in curing or killing. I've lived in Foochow for over 15 years, and if I have no especial affection for the native population who make up the bulk of my patients, I believe they are fond of me and would suffer some distress by my prolonged absence. But the wealthy Chinese merchant Kim Ching had been insistent. He had started life in Foochow as a coolie, but over the years had prospered greatly, and now owned plantations, schooners, and trading enterprises of all sorts throughout the Malay archipelago. He was convinced that I was the only doctor who could cure his now fully ripened cataract, and had eventually made me the proverbial offer I could not refuse. So I made the long and complicated sea journey to the island of Tikana, where he had his principal residence. I travelled with my servant, R.K., who acted as my assistant, did dressings, gave anaesthetics, and so on, but also prepared my opium pipes whenever I was inclined to indulge myself in that direction. For I must tell you that I have been a moderate smoker of many years, having found in the drug an inestimable aid in cultivating that inner sense of detachment which should be the goal of every civilized human being. Thus it was, the operation completed and Kim Ching convalescent, that I sat on the veranda of his roadside store at peace with the world, which consisted of half a dozen chickens scratching in the dust and a mangy dog hunting for fleas.
This is Kim Ching's, isn't it?
Yes.
Is he about?
No, he's sick.
Oh, bad luck. We can get a drink, though.
Surely.
Come on up, Fred.
What will you have?
Oh, a beer would do me nicely.
Yeah, me too.
Boy, two beers. Where have you come from?
Thursday Island. Just come in on the lugger there, the Fenton.
Thursday Island? That's a goodish way. A
nice breeze, no sea to speak of, piece of cake. Nichols is my name. Captain Nichols.
How do you do?
Maybe you've heard of me.
Can't say I have, I'm afraid.
I've been sailing these waters for 30 years. There's not an island in him I ain't put in at one time or another.
Ah, well, I'm a stranger here.
Know your face, though. Which swear I've seen you somewhere. This here's Fred Blake.
Mr. Blake? Ah, thank you.
Making a long stay.
I'm waiting with the Dutch packet.
North or south?
North.
Well, cheers.
Cheers.
What did you say your name was?
I didn't.
You ask no questions and you won't be told no lies, eh?
It's Saunders.
Saunders, eh? You know a few people by that name, though. Whether it was theirs or not by rights, nobody knew but themselves.
Well, I can assure you it is my name.
Oh, no offence intended.
And none taken.
Tell me, though, what's the matter with Kim Ching? I was looking forward to having a bit of a chinwag with the old devil.
Trouble with his eyes, I'm afraid. Cataract.
That's it, of course. Doc Saunders. I knew I'd seen your face. Foochow. I was up there, though. 7-8 years ago. There, Fred. Best doctor in the Far East, especially for eyes. Isn't that right, Doc?
Well,
yes. Still, I thought you never left Foochow from 1 year's end to the other.
Well, I have now.
What a bit of luck for me.
I beg your pardon?
Yes. You see, I suffer from dyspepsia, something awful.
Oh, you and your stomach.
It's all right for you. You don't know. I've tried everything, Doctor, but it's no good. Whatever passes my lips, I know I'll suffer for it.
Well, it's a chronic condition. I can't work miracles.
I don't ask that. But you could examine me and tell me what you'd prescribe.
How long are you staying here?
Our time's our own.
I thought we were pushing off as soon as we'd got what we want.
Which is...
General stores.
Ah, trading, are you?
In a manner of speaking.
You're not going to Macassar by any chance?
We might be. Why?
Well, do they have any papers here?
Papers?
Australian papers?
I shouldn't be.
With Australian news?
Well, any papers would be in Dutch. I don't read Dutch, so I wouldn't know. In any case, they'd be at least a month old.
How about wireless or cable?
Oh, not here.
This ain't exactly the hub of the universe, Fred.
Another bottle of beer, Doc?
I don't think I will, thank you. I'm going back to the rest house where I'm staying, but if you'd like to join me for a meal this evening...
That'd be fine. Change for the lugger, eh, Fred?
Oh, you don't want to be bothered with us?
Oh, it's no bother. No bother at all, I assure you. At about 6 o'clock?
I must say, this is a treat. After what we've had to put up with on the lugger.
R.K. is doing. Helping out in the kitchen. The Chinese are natural-born cooks.
Don't know about that, but... Whatever it was you give me before we started seems to have done the trick. What was it?
Oh, a little preparation I found useful in other cases like yours.
Do you think you could cure me, then?
Possibly. I'd need to watch you for a while. Try one or two different things.
Well, I have a good mind to take you up on that, Doc. If we was to stay on here for a bit...
No. We're sailing tomorrow.
Who says so?
We've got to get on.
Of course, if you're trading, I do see...
Well, there's no hurry. You see, Fred's got this bit of capital. Thought he might find something in these parts to invest it in. That's right, isn't it, Fred?
Yeah, that's right.
Buy a plantation somewhere. Do a bit of pearl fishing, that sort of thing. Eh, Fred?
Yeah.
Fine life for a young fella.
Oh, yes, indeed. And I do see you don't want to waste time.
That's right. So, if you were to give him some of that stuff, Doc...
Look, I've got a better idea. I'm fed up with this godforsaken island. The sooner I can start making my way back home, the happier I'll be. So, rather than waiting for the packet, if you could take me on your boat to Timor, say, or to Macassar, or Surabaya, anywhere, really, you could have all the treatment you want.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
We can't carry any passengers.
We can sign him on.
There's no accommodation.
Well, I guess the doctor ain't particular.
Oh, not a bit. I'll bring my own supplies, and R.K. will cook for me.
Nothing doing.
Now, see here, young fellow, me lad. Who gives orders on the boat, you or me?
Whose boat is it?
You know very well whose boat it is.
I won't have him on board, and that's that.
Well, it's only for 5 or 6 days, and you would be doing me a great favour.
I'm sorry.
Oh, you make me tired. What are you scared of?
Who says I'm scared?
I do.
I've got nothing to be scared about.
Now, look here, I don't want to cause a quarrel. If Blake doesn't want me, let's say no more about it.
I want you. I'm skipper, and what I say goes. Get your kit packed and come on board tomorrow morning, and I'll sign you on as a member of the crew.
You'll do nothing of the sort. I won't have anyone else on the lugger, and that's that.
Oh, won't you? And what'll you say if I run us straight up to B&B, to British territory?
I'd say you'd better take care that you don't have an accident happen.
Who'd sail the damn boat if it did? You and the blackfellas? Don't make me laugh.
Where do you want to go?
Any Dutch island. Anywhere I can soon get a ship that'll take me on my way.
Well, it'll be better than being cooped up with him all the time.
Sure it will. 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, then, Doc. That suit you?
Oh, it'll suit me, A1.
In the morning, though, as I contemplated the shabby little vessel, I was inclined to regret having made my proposition. The Fenton was barely 50 feet long and badly in need of a coat of paint. And to me, who could recollect no sea voyage on anything other than a steamer, the flimsy sails seemed to promise a highly capricious method of propulsion. On board, the cabin, which provided the principal accommodation in the after part of the ship, was so low one could barely stand, and any possibility of spaciousness was inhibited by the mainmast, which went through the middle of it. That, at least, was fairly substantial. Captain Nichols, however, regarded the dirty, unkempt little craft with the satisfaction of a workman who has complete confidence in his tools and is assured in their use. And he and his crew of 3 dark-skinned Torres Straits Islanders applied themselves to the business of setting sail, while R.K. and I stowed our provisions and unrolled our mattresses and generally settled in. Any fears were further dispelled as the little ship now bounded along over a gentle swell and beneath a cloudless blue sky. Green islands passed on both sides, gulls flew around us in lazy sweeps, and every so often a flying fish would break the surface of the water and make a long, darting flight before diving down again with a tiny splash.
There's an anchorage at Bardu, about 50 miles. We should make it by nightfall.
What's that, Bardu?
Oh, just an anchorage. We try not to sail at night.
Let's hope our friend will be a little more affable by then.
Fred? He's just a kid. Take no notice. Now then, Doctor, how about that treatment?
Yes, indeed. Come down to the cabin, and I'll start by giving you a thorough examination.
If I don't have any pain after this lot, I'll admit you're a wonder, Doc.
You won't have any pain.
Might even say it'd be worth it if I did. Oh, this is good.
I dare say R.K. lent his usual hand with the cooking.
There, Fred. Looks as if we're going to do ourselves all right after all.
Yeah, well, it's certainly better than what usually comes out of that galley.
What did I tell you? Doc, I've been wondering, how come a chap like you settles in a place like Fuzhou?
I like it there.
But you studied in England, didn't you?
Yes.
I heard tell you was a specialist. A big practice in London and all that.
Why, you mustn't believe all you hear.
Ever go back to England?
Nope. My home's in Fuzhou.
I don't blame you. England's finished anyway. Too many rules and regulations. Like you've got to be in that, what do they call it? The medical register?
You think I might not be in it?
Well, I did hear tell.
You must have confidence in your doctor, Captain. He can't do very much for you if you haven't.
You wouldn't be here if I didn't believe in you.
Doctor? Well, at least I've not seen much of the inside of jail.
Yeah, what do you... That's a good one. No more have I, Doc. But don't forget, there's many a good man gone to jail for no fault of his own.
Oh, true.
And there's many a man as might have gone there if he hadn't thought a change of air would suit him.
Hey, what the hell's so funny?
It was a complete shot in the dark on my part. I knew nothing whatever about Captain Nichols. But if ever a man gave the air of having a whole world of villainy to hide, it was he. I wouldn't trust him an inch. But I understood him. And what's more, I liked him. As for his sly shafts in my direction, they have no relevance to this present tale, and I shall not mention them again.
15-2, 15-4, 15-6, 15-8, and a pair's 10 and a pair's 12, and
3's
15, and 1 for his knob,
16. If I'd had first lay, I'd have been there.
Yeah, but you didn't, did you? So that's another £3 you owe me.
I never knew anyone hold such cards.
Yeah, well, you still got to be able to play them.
Oh, don't give me that.
Not having another game, then? Chance to get your own back.
Go to hell.
You look put out, Captain.
Got the luck of old Nick himself.
Mr. Blake.
Mr. Bleeding Blake. Can't tell you how much he's had off me in the few weeks we've been on board.
Why do you go on playing with him if he wins all the time?
I've got to get it back, what he's had off me. Nigh on £70.
That's a lot of money.
I'll tell you what I don't know about cribbage ain't worth knowing. My luck's got to change, and then it'll be my turn. He's loaded, you know that.
Yes, you said he was looking for an investment.
Yeah, that's what I said.
You mean it's not true? That's not the purpose of your voyage?
No.
Then
What is?
Look, Doc, you won't let this go any further, will you?
Of course not.
Well, it was back in Sydney, see? I've got to say it, I was well and truly down on my luck. In the old days, I'd have been on the beach. But I'm a married man now, see, and the wife had gone into service, so that sort of kept things going. But for me, well, it's no life to be dependent on a tight-fisted, mean, money-grubbing... Not being married, have you, Doc?
No.
You're wiser than you know.
Yeah, I dare say. About Blake?
Yes, well, I'm in this bar, and all right, I'll admit it, hoping to scrounge a beer or two to pass the evening, when in comes this fellow, name of Ryan.
Ah, Nichols. So, how's the world been treating you?
Rotten.
Still looking for a job, then?
What's it to you?
Well, I'd say that if a man like you hasn't a job, it's more by bad luck than bad management.
And you'd be dead.
Those pearling lookers. You know, like they have out of Port Darwin and round Thursday Island.
I know.
Taking one of them and cruising the island's Dutch New Guinea way for a few months.
Sounds all right to me.
Well, that's the job, then.
Yeah, but doing what? Trading?
No.
What, then?
Just... pleasure.
Oh, are you kidding?
Now, don't take that tone, Captain Nichols. I don't like it.
No, no offence. No offence, Mr. Ryan.
Ah, thanks very much. Sup your drink, Captain.
I'll tell you how it is.
Well, cheers.
Now, there's this young fella, you see. He's been working too hard. His dad's a pal of mine in a very good position with a lot of influence. And he thinks his boy needs to get away from it all for a bit. Have a good, long rest.
And he'd like me to...
That's it. Always a bit delicate, the lad's been, and the doctors think a bit of a cruise on a sailing ship would do the trick. But not just any old ship. That's why my friend bought this catch and asked me to find someone to skipper. That's when I thought of you.
I'm very grateful, Mr. Ryan.
There's lots of islands between Australia and China.
Thousands.
Dutch governed. That's very important.
Oh, yes.
And if you come across one that takes your fancy, you just drop anchor and stay for a while. The important thing is the boy is kept quiet, away from where there's lots of people.
I get you. And how long for, exactly?
Well, it depends on the boy's health. 2, 3 months, maybe 6, even 8 a year. It all depends.
Yeah. And what do I get out of it?
200 quid when your passenger comes on board. 200 when you get back.
You're on. Good man. Right then. When do you want me to sail?
Now.
Now? Tonight?
Yeah, she's anchored a few miles up the coast. I've got a car outside. We'll be there in no time.
Yeah, but what's the hurry?
The boy's dad's a big businessman. It's the way he always does things.
Politician, is he?
Now, why should you think that?
I don't know. With an election coming up, he's sort of...
Look, Mr. Nichols, don't you go thinking what you don't need to. All you have to do is to sail the ship and see the lad has a good rest far away from anything that might bother him.
Yeah, of course. There's just one thing, though.
What's that?
The wife. If I don't come back tonight, she'll be making inquiries.
I'll go and see her myself. Explain everything.
You will?
Everything to her complete satisfaction.
Yeah, and mine. Be quite something to get away from her for a bit.
There's just one other thing. And this refers to now and later on. If you don't want a knife in your back, nor a bullet in your guts, you better not try any monkey business. Okay.
So you see, Doc, it's all in confidence, like.
You can trust me, don't worry.
Ryan ain't the sort that makes idle threats.
I'm sure. I take it your passenger was young Blake.
Too right he was. He wasn't there when we got to the ship, but while I was checking the stores and the crew, they brought him on board. All dressed up he was. Blue serge suit, collar and tie. Not a bit like he looks now.
Not as fit either, eh? Oh,
don't you believe it. He was a picture of health. Jumpy, though. In fact, downright scared, I'd have said. Still, I kept my mouth shut, and Ryan paid over the dibs, like he said.
£200?
In gold sovereigns. Now, you don't see them these days outside of banks, so whoever's behind it must be pretty high up.
And, who do you think that is?
I ain't saying.
No hint from Blake as to what it's all about?
Well, like I said, politics. He's connected with someone pretty high up, some minister, son, nephew, I don't know. The government in New South Wales is a bit rocky just now. What with an election coming up, the least little thing, they'd be out.
Some sort of scandal, then.
Reckon that's it.
Is there anyone in the government called Blake?
Blake's no more his name than it is mine. But whoever it is needs young Fred out of the way till it blows over. I don't matter anymore.
What is it you think he's done?
Murder, if you ask me.
He's only a boy.
Old enough to hang.
Looks as if we're in for a bit of a squall.
Hey, great this, isn't it?
Yes.
What I call exhilarating.
Blew the cobwebs away. What do you say, Doc?
Give me the sea from the beach.
Captain Nichols had come into his own. That vulgar, shifty, cheating creature, his low, squalid mind, normally occupied in little more than how to get the better of his fellows, was now in this vast desert of angry waves, without a chance of succor if catastrophe befell, utterly without fear, at ease, proud, self-assured, and happy. And still it blew. The cook lurched along the deck, bearing dinner. Nichols handed the wheel to one of the native boys and beckoned me to join him and Blake in the cabin.
I can't really say I'm all that ready to eat.
No? God, I am. How about you, Fred? How's your appetite?
All right.
That's the ticket.
Well, if you can digest that, you can digest an ox.
Bless you, Doctor. One time I can forget my dyspepsia is when there's a bit of a blow.
How much longer is it likely to go on?
Oh, it's like a woman having a baby. It'll have to get worse before it gets better.
Oh, good God.
Don't worry, Doc. We're quite safe. I'd rather go to sea in one of these Australian pearling luggers than in a transatlantic liner. Game of crib when we've finished eating, Fred?
Sure.
That was the crowning humiliation for me, to settle down and play that ridiculous game in the middle of this turmoil. I was obviously the only man on board who was afraid. There was I, an intelligent man, a man who regarded himself as a philosopher, who looked on death as no more than the opening of a door at the right moment, in the grip of this craven terror, which was compelling me to curl up and whimper, to pray for help to a God in whom I had no belief. There was only one course for me. I clambered forward to where R.K. had stowed the valise containing the pipes and the lamp and all the paraphernalia for escape.
Morning, Doctor.
Morning.
You're up early.
Yes, I'm relishing this unaccustomed tranquility.
We lost a dinghy during the night.
I'm not surprised.
The jib was ripped to pieces too.
You came up on deck. Did you stay there?
Yeah, I thought if we found it, I'd sooner be in the open.
And you weren't afraid?
Nah, if it's coming to you, it'll come. There's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, I was terrified.
Yeah, Nichols said you were. He thought it a hell of a joke.
Yes, I remember thinking myself how funny it was. That I, at my age, with so much less to lose than you, should dread losing it so much more.
Hey, if you were so scared, how could you think at all?
Ah, it was my body that was scared. My mind was clear as crystal.
It was? You did manage to... Well, what I mean is, you slept right through the worst of it?
Yes, I smoked.
Oh, yeah, Nichols told me that's what you're up to, but I didn't believe him. Mind you, when we got down to the cabin, it was enough to take the top of your head off.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. But it was the only place, and you were both on deck. Tell me, though, why didn't you believe it?
Well, I couldn't imagine a man like you degrading himself in that way.
One should be tolerant of other people's vices.
Yeah, I guess I got no right to point a finger. And I, look, I'm sorry I was so unpleasant, you know, about your coming aboard with us.
Oh.
I've been ill, you know. My nerves are a bit funny.
Yes. Yes, I had heard.
But I think I'm getting better.
Shall I tell you something?
Well, you don't have to.
Oh, it's not about me. I try not to talk about myself.
What is it, then?
It's a reflection based on experience.
Oh, yeah?
When some incident destroys the entire pattern of one's life, it may be a stroke of the greatest good fortune. One may well look back years later and think that not for anything would one change the life one has now for what had seemed so desirable then.
Why did you tell me that?
I thought it might be a useful piece of information.
You can't be sure, though, can you?
Mm-hmm. You can't be sure about anything or anybody.
You're dead right there. Take Nichols, for example.
What about him?
A natural-born twister, if there ever was one. If there was a few quid to be made by doing a sin, he wouldn't hesitate. Yet last night he handled his ship like a master. Nerves of steel and a grin all over his crooked face. How come a villain like him should have such pluck?
Yeah, I'm afraid nothing and no one's entirely black or white.
Yeah, I know, but at the same time I'd always been led to believe that if a man's wrong at heart and it comes to a crisis, he just crumples up. Not him, though. Last night I could only admire him.
I doubt if your admiration will be all that long-lasting.
Nah.
He'll soon revert.
Yeah, to his normal conceited self.
Conceited?
Oh, yeah. Take the cribbage, for example. He thinks he's good, but I beat him every time.
Ah, now there he says it's his bad luck.
Oh, don't you believe it. I've played cards all my life and I've got a knack for it. Ties up, I think, with me being an accountant. Nichols hasn't a dog's chance playing with me.
Doc?
Yeah. Good morning, Captain.
It's come on again, Doc. My dyspepsia. Soon as we got into calmer waters, there it was, on me chest again, something cruel.
Oh, we shall have to see what we can do.
Well, there's not much time. 2-3 days now and we'll be at Gandamelia. And you'll be leaving us to catch your Royal Netherlands steamer.
Faint heart, Captain. Faint heart. In fact, it was longer. The gale had blown us off our course, and for a further 24 hours we'd been becalmed. So it was not until 6 days later that we sailed into the archipelago dominated by the twin islands of Candomeria. The latter was little more than the jungle-clad conical hill, a plume of smoke drifting up from its volcanic crater. The town, with its harbour, was on Canda. Nichols and Blake had come ashore with me. They needed to replace the lost dinghy and to get a new foresail. But they were also happy, as I was, to stretch their legs and to feel solid earth beneath their feet. The town had an air of ancient opulence. The bungalows were ornate, with Doric or Corinthian columns supporting their high-pointed roofs. But their whitewashed walls were stained and worn, their gardens unkempt and rank. And the hotel, when we found it, was all of a piece with the rest. The half-caste manager spoke only Dutch, and we were having great difficulty in letting him know my requirements when we were rescued by a young giant of a man with an open, good-natured face who interpreted for us.
You can have a nice room, your board included. It will cost you 8 quid in a day and include your servant.
Well, that seems reasonable enough. I'll get my traps up from the ship right away, Captain.
Sure. What about a drink first, though? Let's have some beer, eh?
Won't you join us?
Thank you very much.
Oh, and perhaps you'd...
Yes. Verstubliat, via Bieren.
You're Dutch yourself, are you?
No, Danish, Eric Christensen. I'm here for a Danish company.
Oh, this is Dr. Saunders.
How do you do?
Captain Nichols.
How do you do?
And I'm Fred Blake.
I am very pleased to make your acquaintance.
You've been here long?
4 years.
Good God.
Which is a fine place. They wanted to move me, but I begged them to let me stay on.
Doesn't look as if there was much business here.
The place is dead. In the old days, it was a great center for the spice trade. Nutmegs in particular. You can still get the scent of them. But now it lives on its memories. An unsuspected isle in far-off seas.
Oh, that's a quotation from somewhere.
Yes, you know it. Pippa Passes, Robert Browning.
How do you come to have read that?
Oh, I read a lot. English poetry I like best of all. Shakespeare, hmm?
Are you saying? About the old days?
The Dutch merchants were so rich they didn't know what to do with their money. There was no cargo to bring out here from Holland, so their ships brought marble to use for their homes. And before them, it was the Portuguese. Did you see the Portuguese fort as you came into the harbor?
I'm not sure.
Tomorrow I will take you there and show it to you.
Oh, yeah, but tomorrow... No, wait. Why shouldn't we stay? Till the doctor sails.
No reason why not. After all the hardships we've been through.
Yeah, we'll take you up on that.
Excellent.
Oh, just one other thing. Do you have any papers here? In English, I mean.
Newspapers?
Yeah.
Frith gets a paper from Australia.
Frith? Who's Frith?
He is an Englishman. He lives about 3 miles from here. He gets a bundle of Sydney bulletins in every mail.
Is there a chance of me having a squint at them?
Sure, I'll borrow them for you. Or I'll take you up there.
And how old would the latest be?
Not old at all. There was a mail 4 days ago.
It's quite a climb.
It had to dominate the harbor.
Yeah, it does that all right. And the islands beyond.
Yes. Are they not wonderful? Each one a green thought in a green shade.
Well, they look all right from a distance, but when you know...
Know what, my friend?
Oh, well, you sail past one, you think, well, there's the answer. Live on one of those for the rest of your life. You know, fishing and keeping pigs and chickens and... Well, Nichols laughed his head off at me, but I insisted on landing and seeing for myself.
And what did you see?
Impenetrable jungle, rotting vegetation, mosquitoes, indistinct scuttling things that appeared and disappeared in the ooze. Nothing what it seemed.
Yes, it's always a risk to put things to the test of experience. That's why I like to come up here and imagine what it was like. What these stones might have seen. Those lonely Portuguese soldiers, yearning for home. Their fear, their sadness.
Are you ever homesick?
No. Oh, I often think of the little village I come from, with black and white cows in green pastures, and of Copenhagen, but it is like a scene in a play. A different play from this, but still one where I can sit in my dark seat in the gallery and watch the spectacle.
But you got your life to lead, to be proud of.
True, but one's life is what one makes it. Here, with all these sights, with all these memories of the past crowding in, with my books and the leisure to steep myself in them. Great heavens, what can the imagination want more?
But it's all make-believe.
It's the only reality there is.
No, reality's doing things, not dreaming about it.
No, no. When you saw those islands from the sea, your heart was filled with delight. When you landed on them, you found them dreary, frightening jungle. Which was the real island? Which are you going to treasure in your memory?
Well, that's bloody rubbish, mate. Look, thinking the earth of something and then discovering it's a washout, well, that's no good, I grant you, but you have to face facts. Where do you expect to get to if you don't take things at their face value?
To the kingdom of heaven.
Where's that?
In my own mind.
I hate to intrude on these philosophical deliberations, but I feel bound to tell you that I am suffering the pangs of thirst.
I also. You shall both come to my house and we shall quench them together.
Ah.
Oh, and Fred, I have some newspapers there. I sent up to Frith for them.
Anything of interest? In the papers.
Oh, no, not really. They've had the election.
Ah. Where?
New South Wales. Labour got in.
And you're pleased about that?
Not especially. I'm not interested in politics.
I see. May I have a look?
Sure. Yeah, sure.
Oh, is this the latest?
No, I got the latest here.
Oh, well, if you've done with it, I might as well look at that.
Right.
Thank you. There was indeed a great deal in the paper about the election, which was not of any great interest to me either. What intrigued me was young Blake's avidity for news.
Already on Takana, one of his first inquiries had been about Australian papers and the wireless. Now here he was giving these Sydney bulletins meticulous scrutiny. I recalled Nichols' suggestion that murder lay behind his present voyaging, and it was some hint in that quarter that I now sought. A couple of murders were mentioned, but in one the murderer had confessed, and the other had occurred well after the date of the Fenton's departure. There was also a fairly detailed account of the inquest on a woman who'd committed suicide. She had apparently been under suspicion of the murder of her husband, one Patrick Hudson, but the evidence against her had been too slight for any action to be taken. Nevertheless, it was now suggested that gossip and her several interrogations by the police had affected the balance of her mind, and that she had, in consequence, taken her own life.
Patrick Hudson. Yes, I've heard of him. A politician. A bit of a rough diamond. Worked his way up. Come to a sticky end.
Oh?
Yeah, papers was full of it just before we left Sydney.
What happened?
Shot. With his own gun.
Suicide?
No, couldn't have been. There were signs of a fight. The talk was that his missus done it.
And had she?
Dunno. I doubt it, though. My experience is women don't let you off so easy. Or to keep you alive as long as they can.
A lot of women have murdered their husbands.
Only by accident. They get careless and go too far. But they don't mean it. Not them.
Hello there, Doctor.
Morning. Want some breakfast?
No, thanks. Had it hours ago down by the harbour with Eric.
Eric?
Christensen.
Ah,
you know, the Danish chap. Oh, yeah. He says the Englishman, Frith, would like us to go and visit him this afternoon. You and me and Nichols.
That's all right with me.
Eric will take us up there. You know, he's a funny bloke. I'm not sure that he's all there.
Why do you say that?
Well, the way he's going on.
What about?
Shakespeare, mostly. All a lot of bunk as far as I was concerned. But he couldn't really tell him to shut up.
Well, I suppose it is a bit odd to find such an enthusiast for English literature in a place like this.
Yeah, you get these literary and artistic sort in Sydney. Women, mostly. Talk about books and all that, and then before you know where you are, they're trying to get you into bed with them.
Really?
Yeah. But he wasn't showing off or anything like that. You know, he's really keen on that stuff. Hey, he's going to lend me Othello to read. You've read it, I suppose?
Oh, many years ago.
Yeah, it's funny, but when he was spouting great chunks of it, it sounded quite exciting. You may be crazy, but I wish there were a few more like him.
You seem to have taken a fancy to him.
Well, he can't help it. He's absolutely straight as a die. Sort that you'd trust with everything you got, your life even. Yet at the same time, you know, great hulking fellow that he is, you feel that you want to take care of him. Yeah, it's funny.
What about this Frith chap he's taking us to see?
Oh, he's got a plantation. Cloves or nutmeg, I forget which. He's a widower. Lives there with his daughter and his old father-in-law, name is Swan.
I'm afraid it's only the nutmeg that's in any way profitable these days. These shorter ones are the nutmeg trees.
Yeah, powerful scent there.
The trade is just about enough to support the three of us. The plantation actually belongs to my father-in-law, Jack Swan, the old man you saw, but yeah. It'll come to me, and in due course it'll belong to my daughter.
And here she is.
Ah, Louise.
I've just been having a bathe in the pool, Father.
These are Christensen's friends.
This is Fred Blake. I told you about him.
How do you do?
Delighted to meet you.
Dr. Saunders?
And Miss Riff?
Nichols. Captain Nichols.
You'll stay with us for supper?
Yeah, well, thank you. Splendid. We see few enough people here, especially fellow countrymen.
Absolute martyr to it, I tell you. Your very good health.
I can't say I've ever had any trouble with my stomach. It's rheumatism I'm plagued with.
It can't be worse than dyspepsia. I'd be a rich man now if it wasn't for that.
Well, money isn't everything.
Oh, I'm not saying it is. I'm just saying...
A drop of scotch for you, Swan.
You know I can't abide the stuff, George. He give me my rum and water as usual.
Scotch, it's been the ruin of the Pacific, Scotch has. If they'd stuck to rum and to sail, things wouldn't be as they are now.
You've got a point there, right enough. And if you haven't done your time before the mast, you've got no right to call yourself a seafaring man, either.
I've done pretty well everything. I was captain of a schooner in the slave trade.
Oh, and blackbirding, eh? Nice bit of money to be picked up that way.
Yeah, I've had money in my time, eh, George? So I've heard.
We, the world, the universe, have no purpose other than his sport.
Yes, I like that. There's a futility about it that gratifies one's sense of irony.
The implications are endless. Oh, I've had masses of notes, and when I have time, I shall turn them into a book.
Ah, time.
Oh, there's never enough. Oh, not the plantation. That runs itself. No. For the last 4 years, I've been working on a metrical translation from the Portuguese of the Lusiads. De Camões.
Why the Lusiads?
It's the last of the great epics. My book on the Vedanta can only hope to appeal to a small public. I owe it to my daughter to undertake a work of a more popular character.
I shouldn't have thought Camões was all that well known.
Oh, yes, one of the greatest of all poets. My fame will be part of her dowry. I want her to be proud of me.
Of course.
Anyway, it's almost as if it had to be. I was a schoolmaster when I came out east, first of all, but I was never any good at it. Tried many things, a bookshop in Singapore, a hotel in Bali. Eventually, I ended up here. And would you believe it? Camões himself spent some time here, on this island.
Really?
He was a soldier of fortune as well as a poet. And then there was Catherine.
Catherine?
My dear late wife. Oh. Catherine was the name of the only woman Camões ever loved. It was for her that he wrote his perfect lyrics.
I see.
Sometimes, when I'm working on the poem, I come across a line I seem to know so well that I can't believe I'm reading it for the first time. So, you see...
With Eric's help, the table is laid and supper is ready.
Splendid. Will you take Dr. Saunders on your right, Louise, and Captain Nichols on your left?
What does she want to sit between those two old men for? Let's sit between Eric and the kid.
I see no reason not to conform to the usages of polite society.
Hey, you just want to show off.
Very well. Doctor, will you sit beside me here?
Yes, of course.
And perhaps Captain Nichols wouldn't mind sitting on my left.
Sure, anywhere else but me.
Here, of course they look to me. Where'd you fish them up from, Eric?
Swan, behave yourself.
No offence, meant.
And no offence taken. I'd sooner Somerset have looked at crook than I looked at fool.
I know a crook when I see one. I've seen too many not to. Hey, been one myself at times.
And who hasn't? You've got to take the world as you find it. Compromise, that's the thing. It's what made the British Empire what it is, compromise.
That's something that's never appealed to me, I'm afraid. I've always had other fish to fry.
I bet someone else caught them for you. Bone idle. That's what you are, George. Had a dozen jobs in your time and never kept one of them.
Oh, I can't believe there's some truth in
it. As I gazed round the table, I reflected on the quirk of circumstance that had brought this diverse company together. I looked at Swan, cackling away in his near senility, still displaying, though, the streak of viciousness that had doubtless sustained him through many questionable enterprises. At Nichols, his present-day counterpart, playing up to the old man Sally's, secure in the knowledge that his day was still to come. At our host, to all appearances one of life's inadequates, a pitiable creature who, despite a gentle soul which patently encompassed much wisdom, was nevertheless convinced he would achieve fame and honour by translating an obscure Portuguese poem not 100 people would have any wish to read. And I looked at Louise as she sat between the two young men. For all her air of repose, of remoteness, there was an easy gaiety about her as she responded to their interest. For about Blake, there was now no hint of sulkiness or of the nervous anxiety he'd shown when I pressed him for the newspaper. Indeed, he was now holding forth umpteen to the dozen with a fluency and charm I'd never have thought possible. While Eric looked on, a proprietorial smile on his pleasantly ugly face, highly satisfied with this paragon whom he'd introduced into the household. The meal came to an end, and Frith and Eric suggested a game of bridge. Nichols and I made up the four. Swan was packed firmly off to bed by his granddaughter, who promptly returned
and took Blake out onto the veranda so that their conversation did not disturb the players. When the rubber was completed, we four guests took our leave and returned to the town in the car that had brought us. It dropped Eric and myself off first and drove on to the harbour with the other two.
It's quite early yet. Would you like to come to my house for a nightcap?
Yes, why not? And the stroll will be pleasant after that old bone shaker. Tell me about Mrs. Frith.
Catherine? She died last year. Heart disease.
You knew her?
Oh, yes. A wonderful woman. She was like a mother to me. Used to spend all my spare time up there. And when I was afraid of abusing their hospitality, she'd come down and fetch me herself.
How did she come to marry Frith?
She was here. He came here. He fell in love with her and she with him.
As simple as that?
Yes.
Were they happy together?
Oh, yes. Swan didn't like him much. Still doesn't, but she thought he was wonderful. And was quite content to go on running the estate while he stayed with his books, reading and writing and making notes.
Oh, a rare woman indeed.
When she knew she was dying, she made Louise promise to look after them both, and she made me promise to look after Louise.
Ah.
It is Louise who has run everything since her mother died.
She's very young.
She's 18, but she's wise and capable.
Oh, yes, I'm sure.
I must tell you, in confidence, that we are engaged.
Louise and you?
Not officially. So I'd sooner you didn't mention it, but it is understood.
I see.
I don't mind waiting. In fact, I am happy to wait. When we are married, we shall no longer have that to look forward to. Though I know it will be perfect, but we have something now that we shall lose. Do you think that's stupid?
No.
She is sweet and gentle and tender, but there is a sort of aloofness that keeps you at a distance. I find that so beautiful, so rare. When she becomes a wife and mother, she will lose it. And I am so ashamed that I shall not go to her as pure as she comes to me.
Now, that is stupid.
Why? When you love someone like Louise, it's horrible to think you've lain in strange arms, that you've kissed bought and painted mouth.
My dear boy, the wise man combines the pleasures of the senses and the pleasures of the spirit in such a way as to increase the satisfaction he gets from both.
Yes, but...
And may I say that the most valuable thing I have learned from life is to regret nothing.
That's
nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Day after tomorrow, you say?
That's right. Calling at Bali, which is somewhere I've always wanted to visit.
Oh, well, I've got to say it. I'll miss you, Doc.
Oh, come on. Your indigestion's well on the mend. Oh,
the pain's a lot less, I'll give you that. But it'd be a lie if I said I was comfortable.
I've told you. You can't expect any more improvement till you have those teeth out.
Yeah, I know. And I will, Doc, but it's a matter of finding a good dentist.
They're no use to you. And God knows they add nothing to your beauty.
Singapore would be the nearest. But the kid wants to stop on here for a bit.
Oh, he does, eh?
Yeah, and go on to Batavia. Something to do with a cable he got this morning.
A cable? Well, who knows he's here?
Just me.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Oh, good evening.
Oh, young Fred was looking for you earlier. Wanted to go for a walk.
Had to be on the other side of the island today. Is he about now?
No. I reckon he's off courting somewhere.
Not much chance of that here.
Well, I don't know. A good-looking fellow like Fred doesn't have much trouble finding it. Take last night. I'd have said he'd clicked all right there.
Last night?
Yes. That girl.
Louise?
That's it. She was with him this morning, having a look at the boat.
She came down with her father. He brought some of his manuscript for me to read. Perhaps they've asked Blake up to supper again.
He had his supper on the Fenton. Dolled himself up something fierce and then went off.
I'll go down there. Maybe he's back.
Oh, he won't be.
He wouldn't be at Frith's as late as this. It's past 11 and they go to bed at 10.
Maybe he's gone to bed too.
What do you mean?
I mean, she looked as if she knew a thing or two. It wouldn't surprise me if the two of them wasn't nicely tucked up together at this very moment. And very nice, too.
One shouldn't judge others by oneself, Captain.
Even if one is a mangy cur.
What's he so upset about? Sweet on the girl himself, is he?
You took a great risk there, Captain.
Well, if someone else has been there, it means there's a chance for him, doesn't it?
You know, you're one of the dirtiest tykes I've ever met.
Really? Well, that's a compliment in a way, ain't it? The funny part is, you don't like me any the less for it. Birds of a feather, Doctor?
Who's that?
It's me, Fred Blake.
What?
Doctor, I've got to see you.
Wait a minute.
What's the matter? You must come to Eric's house at once. There's been an accident. An accident? Yeah, Eric shot himself. I've just come from here. All right, just let me get dressed. He's dead. Are you sure? Yeah, quite sure. Well, in that case, what good can I do? Oh, look, he can't be left like that. You must come and see. Keep your voice down. Come in. Doctor. There's blood on your hand. It's Eric's. Look, be careful. Don't get it on your clothes. Come over here. We'll wash it off. Look, we can't leave him lying there. Look, you're in a foreign country, and the Dutch authorities are not the easiest to deal with. But are you sure you want them asking all sorts of questions? Perhaps cabling Sydney? I don't care. Did anyone see you? At the house? No. What were you doing there, anyway? I had something to say to him that couldn't wait.
He did do it himself, I suppose.
What?
It wasn't you that shot him.
Me? Oh, for God's sake, I wouldn't have hurt a hair on his head. If he'd been my own brother, I couldn't have thought more of him.
Then what's it all about?
Now, come on, you better tell me. It's that girl, Fritz's daughter.
Louise?
Yeah. I had a bit of fun with her tonight.
But you only saw her for the first time yesterday.
What's that got to do with it? She took a fancy to me the moment we set eyes on each other, I could tell. Then I took a fancy to her, too, by God. While you were playing bridge, we went out into the garden.
I did notice.
Well, I kissed her. She was just aching for it, and I was in quite a state myself as well. Well, damn it, there hasn't been anyone since we left Sydney.
Yes, I dare say. Go on.
Well, this morning, she was in town with her old man, and she came down to the harbour, and I took her on board. But that damn old Nichols was hanging around all the time, so I said that I'd go up to the plantation tonight after they'd all gone to bed. Well, she said, no. But sure enough, when I got there, she was waiting for me. And God, it was great.
Oh, you can spare me the details.
Well, at last she said I'd better go, so I got dressed. All but my shoes, so as not to make a noise crossing the veranda from her room. Now, I just nipped over the veranda rail when somebody grabbed me. It was Eric. He just lifted me up as if I was a little kid. And then when he saw who it was, he socked me on the side of the head, which practically knocked me out. And then he went striding off at 100 miles an hour.
And you?
Well, I was in a hell of a state. What with the shock of him being there and wondering whether Louise had heard anything, or anyone else for that matter, well, not to mention the blow on the head. Well, I just lay there, and then I thought, I must explain to him.
Explain to him?
Yeah. Well, anyone else, I wouldn't have cared, but I couldn't stand the idea of Eric thinking me a damn swine. He's one in a thousand. You know, so thoroughly decent and... Well, do you see what I mean?
Goodness, yes. What a shattering dilemma.
Look, if you're going to be like that...
Oh, get on, man. Get on with it.
Well, in the scuffle, I'd lost my shoes. By the time I found them, there was no sign of him. Still, I reckon that at that time of night, he'd be making for home, so that's where I went. I had to put myself right with him. You know, tell him that I was really quite keen on the girl. And after all, well, it's only human nature, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
His house was in darkness, but the door was unlatched, so I went in. And I called out, but there wasn't any answer. And I thought, well, what the hell, I'll leave it till tomorrow. So I turned to go, and God, I almost fell over him. I struck a match, and I saw, well, the whole side of his head was all... It was all one bloody mess.
Steady.
When I lit the lamp, I saw that he was holding a revolver. And I touched his face to see if he was alive, but... Well, he couldn't have been. Not with that wound. Eric, I mean, what the hell could have made him do it?
He was engaged to Louise.
What?
Not officially announced, but understood.
He never told me.
I suppose he thought it was none of your business.
God, the damn bitch. If I'd known that, I wouldn't have touched her with a fag end of a barge pole. No, it can't be true. It can't be.
He told me so himself.
Well, then why didn't he kill me or her? Why kill himself?
Curious, isn't it?
God, I wish he had killed me. My old man said I was no damn good. I make trouble wherever I go. It was only this morning that I thought things had changed, that I was going to get another chance.
Another chance of what?
Well, there was a cable for me. I'd let them know where I was. Do you know what it said?
How could I know?
It said that I died of scarlet fever in Sydney 2 weeks ago.
I'm afraid I don't quite...
Oh, there's been an epidemic there. But the election's over and the governments are in again with a thumping majority, so Father's all right. No trouble in organising it so that some poor anonymous wretch gets buried in the family grave under my name.
Ah, now I think I'm with you.
Yeah, I can just see him with a black band round his arm, putting on a brave face.
What was it you did?
I killed a chap.
Oh. Well, I wouldn't tell too many people if I were you.
Well, you take it pretty calmly. Have you ever killed anyone?
Only professionally.
If only you knew what a relief it was when I got that cable. An end of the running. Forever being on the lookout for someone to nab me. You know, the first time that I saw you, I thought you were a detective.
Hi.
And now this... Well, there's a curse on me, I think.
Oh, don't talk rot.
What am I going to do? I mean, what am I going to do? You won't believe this, Doc, but when that girl and I were lying in each other's arms, I even thought, well, why shouldn't I marry her and settle down here? There's a letter and some money for me at Batavia, and I could sell the boat, and then maybe I could go into business here, in partnership. In partnership with Eric.
Well, you can't do that now. But you could still marry Louise.
After what's happened? Oh, God, I hope I never see her again.
Well, whatever you're going to do in the future, for now, you'd better get some sleep.
Sleep? How can I sleep?
Well, I certainly mean to. Come, I'll give you something.
Thanks to my shot of morphine, he was still peacefully sleeping when I went along to breakfast next morning. There was no doubt, though, that when he awoke, it would be to a sense of grief and desolation that from now on would always be with him. For he'd fallen victim to a rare manifestation of pure goodness in a human being, and the thought that he had contributed to that individual's destruction would haunt him to his dying day. Mind you, I was interested to note that when at length he joined me at the breakfast table, the events of the night appeared not to have had too restrictive an effect on his appetite. It was while he was tucking in that the manager ushered a Dutch official in a smart white uniform over to our table.
I am sorry to tell you that a Danish trader called Christensen has shot himself.
Christensen? The big fellow? Oh, dear.
The manager tells me that he visited you here last night.
That's right.
Was he sober?
Oh, yes, quite sober.
Did he say or do anything that might suggest he would do away with himself?
No. Of course, I didn't know him very well. I only arrived 3 days ago. I'm waiting for the Princess Juliana.
Yes, I know. But you may have been the last person to see him alive.
I'm sorry, I can't help you.
And this gentleman?
He wasn't here.
Well, it looks as if it's the old story. A man far from home, living alone in this climate. One day it gets too much, and he puts a bullet through his head. Much better to have a little girl to live with you, and it makes hardly any difference to your expenses.
With which piece of homely advice, he kicked his heels and left us. In a climate like that of Candameria, it was essential that burial should take place pretty quickly, and as the case was quite straightforward, the formalities were few, so the funeral was held late that afternoon. Three or four local acquaintances of Eric's were present, along with Blake and Nichols and myself, and of course Trith was there. Louise was conspicuous by her absence, thus displaying a certain delicacy in a situation which, even with her coolness and self-possession, she might have had some difficulty in carrying off. As we dispersed, it was evident that Blake wanted to talk, although it was not until after we were back in my room at the hotel that he began to unburden himself.
I've told you so much already, I may as well tell you the rest. Well,
I'm not curious, I assure you.
I dare say, but I need to. Needed to for a long time. In fact, sometimes I can hardly prevent myself from telling Nichols. But I'm not quite such a fool as all that.
I don't feel he's really the sort to confide in. Still, if you feel I am, fire away.
I don't know if you know, but my father's quite an important political figure back home.
I had gathered as much.
My name's not Blake, by the way.
No.
Anyway, one Sunday last year, we had a lunch party at our house. Mr. and Mrs. Darnes were there.
Who are they?
Oh, he's the state premier.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know.
She was at school with my mother, so they're quite friendly. There was also a fellow called Patrick Hudson who was there with his wife. He was a Roman Catholic and had a lot of influence with the Irish and the Italians. And because of the election, it was important to butter him up and get him on the side of the government. I didn't even want to be there. But Dad said I... What I really wanted was to go fishing. Oh, God, if only I had.
You were saying the lunch party.
Oh, yeah. After we'd finished eating, my father and the Premier took Hudson off to the study while Mother and Mrs. Darnes tried to be pleasant to Mrs. Hudson. But it was heavy going, and it was obvious that they weren't being very successful. So Mother suggested I took Mrs. Hudson out and showed her around the garden.
Oh, for God's sake, give me a cigarette.
What? Oh, sure.
Oh, thanks. You know, you're a very good-looking boy.
Oh, do you think so?
I expect you've been told that before.
Only by my mother. She's probably prejudiced. There was a lot more like that. And I ended up promising to go dancing with her at the Australia Hotel.
Oh, dear.
I wasn't keen. But Father said it would be standoffish not to. Anyway, she's old enough to be my mother.
So you went dancing?
Yeah. Yeah, I enjoyed it. Not a bad dancer, even if I say it myself. She was very good. But there are ways and ways of dancing, and it didn't take me long to see what she was up to. Still, I thought, if it gives her any pleasure, well, why not let her have it? So one thing led to another, and my God, she was hot stuff. Thought I knew a thing or two about all that, but I jolly soon realized I knew nothing. But it didn't stop there. She said she was crazy about me and that she'd fallen in love with me the first time she saw me. And Well, that was flattering in a way, but at the same time, she disgusted me. But there was no getting rid of her. She made me see her every day, and she'd ring me at the office, and she'd ring me at home, and she even took to waiting for me in the street when I left work. I can tell you, I was getting scared stiff. It was only a matter of time before it was noticed. I thought of her husband finding out, and the effect that might have on Father and his political mates, well, let alone what he might do to me. So I told her it had got to stop.
You can't throw me over. You're everything in the world to me.
Oh, don't be so silly. Look at our ages.
What's that got to do with it?
Oh, hang it. You're an old woman.
You think that makes a difference?
Well, it damn well should. You ought to be ashamed of yourself.
But I love you. I love you with all my heart.
No, I don't love you. I can't bear the sight of you, so for God's sake, leave me alone.
What can I do to make you love me?
Nothing.
Then I shall kill myself.
Oh, do what you like. And I walked away and left her. Of course, I know it sounds pretty cold-blooded, but you know what they say? People who threaten to commit suicide never do. It's the ones who you never, you know, or don't know about that.
What happened next, then?
back in Sydney.
Yeah, well, over the next few days, I admit I did have a few anxious moments. The more I thought about it, she could well have been the exception. So in a funny sort of way, I'd have been relieved if she had started pestering me again, or been hanging about in the street. But there's no sight nor sound of her. Nothing in the papers, as it would have been if anything had happened. So I began to relax a bit. It looked as if it was all over.
But it wasn't.
No. About 10 days went by, and then a letter came.
From her?
Yeah. In it, she apologized for the way she'd behaved, said she'd been a bit crazy, but it was all right now, and she was going away to New Zealand for 3 months. And then she went on to say that her husband was going to be away that night, and would I pop in for a few minutes to say goodbye? Well, the letter was so calm and sensible, and I thought, well, why not? After all, it was the least I could do.
It's doctor's orders, actually.
How do you mean?
Well, I've these friends in Auckland, and I got the doctor to say a change and a rest would do me good. So I'm going to stay with them for a bit.
Oh, I see.
In any case, Pat's going to be involved more and more with the election. He'd be delighted not to have me around. I mean, he knows how politics bore me.
Yeah.
Talking of Pat.
Yeah?
Well, it seems we were seen a couple of times. At the pictures.
Oh, God! What did I tell you?
It's all right. I go to the pictures often enough on my own. Pat knows that. It's just that if our being there together should come up in any way, well, it'd be best if we both had the same explanation.
And what's that going to be?
It's perfectly simple. We met by chance at the cinema, and as we were both alone, we sat together. The second time it happened, you insisted on paying for me.
We were only seen twice.
That's all. So long as we both say the same, we've nothing to worry about.
Well, all I can say is, it's a relief you're being sensible that it's over.
Sure.
Well, then.
It wouldn't hurt you to kiss me goodbye, though, would it?
No. No, I don't suppose it would. Goodbye. Look, you promised.
Oh, I know, my darling, I know. But just this once more. Oh, please.
No.
For the last time. After tomorrow, I won't be here.
Look.
Please. Please.
All right. Let's go upstairs.
No. Here. On the sofa. Oh, I love you. I love you.
I heard the door open behind me. It was Hudson. For a moment, we both just stood staring at each other. Then he came at me like a charging bull. I went down with him on top of me, and I tried to protect my face from the rain of blows, but then he got his hands around my windpipe, and I began to choke. And I thrashed about with my arms, and then I felt something being put into my right hand. It was a revolver. I shoved it against his side and fired. And then I fired again. And he gave a sort of a gasp and rolled off me.
It's all right. He's dead.
I thought he was going away.
The trip was cancelled. He had a phone call.
Who from?
Me.
What? You mean it? You fixed it all for me to...
What you've got to do now is keep your head. Go home and have your supper with the family just like normal. I'm going out to the pictures like I'd intended.
You're crazy.
Oh, no, I'm not. I know exactly what I'm doing. And you'll be all right if you do what I tell you.
But
you won't need to say a word to anyone. Leave it all to me.
No. No.
Don't you forget, if it comes out, you'll hang. Oh, but don't worry, my darling. You've got nothing to be afraid of. I won't let them touch a hair of your head. You're my property, and I know how to look after what belongs to me.
Oh, my God.
And when it's all over, we'll be married.
My God. My God.
You didn't really think I was going to give you up, did you?
Presumably, though, you didn't keep it to yourself.
No. When I got home, they must have realized that something had happened to me. Something pretty terrible. Anyway, I made a clean breast of it all.
All?
Yeah, pretty well. Well, yeah. And I had shot him in self-defense. Oh, thank God Flory had had the revolver there and put it into my hand.
Where had it come from?
Dunno. Maybe she took it off him. Maybe she had it ready. But it was self-defense.
So, you told your parents?
Yeah. My mother, needless to say, was terribly upset. She started weeping, and well, I was pretty near tears myself. But Father shut us both up. He was furious, of course, that I should have got myself into that situation, but well, to a certain extent it was his fault. I mean, if I'd gone fishing that day, then...
quite so.
Maybe that's why he didn't actually explode. Still, he's not a lawyer for nothing, my dad. He made me go over it all again in every detail. And sure enough, that same night he went into action.
And set up your escape, getting you out of the country.
Yeah. Well, he's a great one for getting wheels turning, for pulling strings. But the most important thing, until I actually got away, was that I had to avoid being asked any questions. By anyone. So first thing next morning, he rang my boss and said that I'd developed a temperature, and that it could well be scarlet fever. Well, there's a bit of an epidemic on.
So you told me.
I did? Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, our doctor is my uncle, mother's brother, and he confirmed that I had to be kept at home completely isolated. And that's what happened until they smuggled me out a few nights later and got me aboard the Fenton with Nichols.
But the cable you had, how would they have got the death certificate?
I've been trying to work that out. The papers had all been pretending that there wasn't an epidemic, but there was. So the hospital would have been crowded, you know, with everyone rushed off their feet. So I suppose in all the confusion, they could have got someone in under my name. Or they could have fixed it so that my name was given to some patient who had died. My father's damn clever, you know. He wouldn't stick at much.
I'd quite like to meet your father.
Maybe something had got out. About Florian and me. And he thought it would be the safest thing if I'd died in the epidemic.
What about Mrs. Hudson? How did she stand?
She had her alibi. She'd come home from the pictures and found all the signs of a terrible struggle and husband dead, shot with his own revolver. And I suppose she played the hysterical widow well enough to put them off the scent.
Then why do you suppose she hanged herself?
How do you know about that?
I saw it in the paper the other night. The paper you were so reluctant to let me see.
So all this is not quite such a surprise to you?
I imagined your story would be something like what you've been telling me. Why do you think she did it?
Well, the paper said there was a lot of malicious gossip.
Yes, I read that.
But I think it's more likely that Father told her I was dead, and then she saw that it had all been for nothing. Yeah, he probably enjoyed doing it, too.
Really?
Well, I don't know. But the sheer cheek of someone like her tangling with his family. Thinking of marrying into it. That would have got up his nose as much as anything else.
I see.
Anyway, she's out of it. Well, I've got to go on. Go on spreading death and destruction, it seems.
Oh, now you're being melodramatic.
Well, haven't I got good reason? I've been responsible for the deaths of three people. All right, perhaps Hudson and his wife had it coming to them, but I can never forgive myself for Eric's.
Don't think he killed himself on your account. You had very little to do with it.
What the hell do you mean?
He killed himself, my dear boy, because he couldn't survive the shock of discovering that someone he'd endowed with every quality and every virtue was, after all, human. That's the worst of being an idealist. You can't accept people as they are. You have to make allowances for them. In the words of Jesus Christ, forgive them, for they know not what they do.
Well, that's good coming from you.
Is it?
Well, you're not a religious man.
Sensible men are all of the same religion.
And what's that?
Sensible men never tell.
What do you believe in?
I believe in nothing but myself and my own experience.
And that's all?
What else can I be certain of?
But that's so narrow, so bound in, so limited.
As someone said, I forget who, short is man's life, and narrow the corner of the earth wherein he dwells.
But surely you're justified in expecting more from life, in making demands on it.
You feel you can? In spite of all that's happened to you?
Yeah.
Well, good. Only be careful not to ask more than life can give.
But if you've got no faith and no hope, what in God's name have you got left?
Resignation.
Resignation? What the hell with that? That's the refuge of the beaten. Now, I'm not willing to accept evil and ugliness and injustice, to stand by while the good are punished and the wicked go scot-free. If life means that virtue is trampled on and honesty is mocked and beauty is fouled, well, then the hell with life.
Yeah, I think you'll feel different in a day or so.
Well, no, I shan't. You can sneer, but I shan't.
I'm not sneering. Smiling, perhaps.
It's the same thing.
Oh, no, it's not. Have you never heard that the only gift of the gods that man does not share with the beasts is laughter?
What about it?
I have acquired my resignation by the help of an unfailing sense of the ridiculous.
Well, bully for you, Doctor. Laugh, then. Laugh your bloody head off.
The Fenton sailed with the dawn the following morning. The Princess Juliana was not due until the late afternoon. As it would have seemed uncivil of me to leave without saying goodbye, I took the opportunity of going out to Frith's plantation. I was ushered into his study, an unbelievably cluttered room at the side of the house.
Forgive me, Dr. Saunders. I just had to complete the stanza.
Oh, not at all. Forgive me for intruding.
It's the final typing of the ninth canto. Oh, but you're going away, aren't you?
Yes, I came to say goodbye.
Oh, pity. I shan't be able to show it to you.
I also came to return the pages you left with me the other day.
Ah, yes. Did you find them to your liking? You can be quite candid.
I'm no literary expert, so
I've aimed for a word-for-word translation, but at the same time preserving the rhythm and the music and the rhyme of the original poem.
Well, it seems to me you've succeeded admirably.
Do you really think so?
Well, not that I know the original work, of course, but the verses did seem to flow and to make their appropriate impact.
Right? I'm glad you were pleased by my efforts. They're nearing their end now, and I must confess that the task has had its arduous moments. I must also tell you that I couldn't have done it at all without my little girl's encouragement.
I'm sure.
It's very right and proper that she should be the chief gainer.
And you? You'll be free to get on with that other work you mentioned, your book on Hindu philosophy.
Perhaps, but I wonder, though, if my creative days aren't over. The Brahmins say that in age one's chief duty is abstract thought and the contemplation of the absolute.
I'm sorry, Father.
It's all right, Louise. Come in. Dr. Saunders has come to say goodbye.
You're leaving too?
On the Princess Juliana this afternoon.
Oh, it's been a great treat to have you here.
Yes, indeed.
We don't have many visitors, and it was very kind of you to come to Christensen's funeral. We Britishers ought to stick together on these occasions. It impresses the Dutch. Not that Christensen was British, of course, but he did, after all, belong to the same nation as Queen Alexandra.
That's very true.
Sad business. But there... It's not everyone who can manage the transition to this Arabian Nights world out here.
I suppose not.
The English do it best. A glass of sherry before you go.
No, thank you. I must be getting back.
In that case, Louise, will you...
Yes, Father.
Goodbye, Doctor.
Goodbye. Yes, I'm sure it was a very great shock.
I was very fond of him.
We talked about you the night before he died. He was very much in love with you. He told me he was going to marry you.
Yes. Have you any idea why he killed himself?
He saw a young Blake coming out of your bedroom.
Oh, my God.
You'd no idea?
No. And how did you know?
Blake told me. Eric was in the garden. They came face to face when he jumped off the veranda.
I see.
He had no idea there was anything between you and Eric. Not until afterwards, and then, of course, it was too late.
How did he find out?
Well, I told him, I'm afraid.
I see. Oh, well, that explains it.
Explains what?
I tried to speak to Fred yesterday after the funeral, but he wouldn't see me. I couldn't understand why.
You weren't in love with him, though. Or were you?
It's all rather complicated.
Forgive me, it's no business of mine anyway.
Oh, I don't mind telling you. I don't care what you think of me.
Why should you?
He's so terribly good-looking. Perhaps the most handsome person I've ever seen.
Yes. I fancy you're not alone in that.
When we met for the first time the other day, here, in the plantation, you remember?
Mm-hmm.
And when you all stayed for the evening, I could hardly take my eyes off him. I suppose you'd call it love at first sight.
I'm not sure I would.
No? No, perhaps not. But from the moment I first saw him, I felt something I'd never felt before in my life. Overwhelming physical desire. I'm sorry, that shocks you.
Not in the least.
Anyway, knowing he was only here for a few days made it all the stronger. If he'd been staying a month or so, it's quite likely nothing would have happened. I would have seen him about and got used to him, and I don't know. I'm not very experienced in these things. But it would probably never have come to anything. I dare say I shouldn't have bothered about him at all. And when he left me that night, I was happy and contented. But I was also free. It wouldn't have mattered if I never saw him again.
What a pity Christensen found out.
Yes. I owe him so much. As a child, I worshipped him. And in a way, I've always loved him. But, you know, I'm not to blame.
No? Not for anything?
No. First of all, it wasn't really me he loved. It was my mother. He admired her so much and then saw her in me. But it wasn't a real person he saw, either her or me. It was like all those Shakespeare heroines of his, an ideal. Eric killed himself because I fell short of the ideal he'd made of me.
Precisely.
And I refuse to blame myself for that.
And you must also try not to grieve too much.
Oh, I shan't. I'm very unhappy, but I shan't grieve. What right has anyone to imprison you in their ideal? What right have people to make an image after their own heart and force it on you and be angry if it doesn't fit you? I don't want to be part of someone else's dream. Eric spreads anyone's. I want to dream my own. And if it's only for me, it's not a dream. After all, it's only my own existence that I can really be sure of.
I confess I found it most satisfying that in that cool, serene, young slip of a girl, I should be presented with such a vivid reflection of my own attitude to life, my own philosophy. And I suppose that's really the end of this particular story. The steam packet took me to Bali, where I was happy to spend several weeks, then on to Java, and so by comfortable stages to Singapore, from where in a couple of days I would catch the liner home to Phu Chau. It was on the dusty terrace of the Van Dyke Hotel there that I heard that familiar voice.
So help me, who'd have thought
it? Oh, good heavens, Captain Nichols. Sit down, sit down. Have a drink.
Oh, I don't mind if I do.
You're looking smart, Captain. Yeah, and there's something else now.
What is it? You've noticed? Had me teeth fixed.
Ah, so you had.
Just like you told me, Doc.
How's the dyspepsia?
Too early to tell yet. Only just had it done. But the dentist bore out what you said. According to him, it's a miracle I'd gone on as long as I had.
Well, there you are, then. And, where's Fred Blake?
Ah. Well, now, come to a sticky end, I'm afraid.
What do you mean?
Fell overboard one night. Or jumped over.
No.
In the morning, he was gone.
Another storm?
No. Sea like a mill pond.
Tell me.
Well, he was very low after we'd come away from Canada. We called at Batavia, like we'd arranged.
Oh, that's right. He was expecting a letter, though.
Yes. Yeah. Well, whether he got it or not, I don't know. Anyhow, a couple of nights out of there, he started drinking heavy. I told him to watch it, but he said it was none of my damn business, so I left him to it. And in the morning, he was gone.
And no one saw anything? You? The crew?
No. And what's more, it puts me in a very awkward predicament, I'll tell you. I mean, I'd been charged to look after him, hadn't I? And they still owe me for that. And then there was the cribbage.
The cribbage? What has that got to do with it?
We played a lot more after we left you. And damn it, he still went on winning. In the end, he had every penny I had to be named off of me.
Your luck didn't change then.
It wasn't luck. I'm a better player than he was any day. I'd never have taken him on, let alone doubled the stakes if I hadn't been certain of that. So there must have been something fishy going on. But when I opened that strong box of his...
You opened his strong box?
Well, I had to, didn't I? After the accident. To see if there was an address or anything to tell his sorrowing relatives like.
Yes.
But would you believe it? It was as empty as the palm of the hand.
Oh, bad luck.
The dirty little dark had his money in his belt and he'd gone overboard with it. If I hadn't been able to sell the lugger for a few quid, I'd be high and dry and no mistake.
Oh, well, at least you've got something out of it.
I never liked him. Not from the very beginning. Crooked he was. Well, he must have been. Stands to reason.
You didn't by any chance happen to help him on his way?
Eh?
I mean, you didn't know he had the money in his belt. Did he jump? Or was he pushed?
Now, look here, Doc. That's a slanderous suggestion. That is... But of course, you're joking, ain't you?
Am I? Yes. Yes, perhaps I am.
Gerard Green was Dr. Saunders, Owen Scott was Fred Blake, and Douglas Blackwell was Captain Nichols in The Narrow Corner. Christensen was Philip Sully, Mrs. Hudson, Carol Marsh, Frith, Geoffrey Siegel, Louise, Cara Kelly, Ryan, Peter Craze, and Swan was Lewis Stringer. The novel by W. Somerset Maugham was dramatized for radio by Geoffrey Siegel and directed by Graham Gould.